Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny, joined by my co-host, Brian. And today, guys, we are previewing slash reviewing the first two games of the NBA Finals and what's to come. So if you've been living under a rock lately, the NBA Finals is tied one apiece between the Celtics and the Warriors. The Celtics came out game one just absolutely dominating the Warriors on their home floor. First playoff loss this season for the Golden State Warriors. Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Derek White all came out very clutch, and the Warriors just did not play inspired basketball. Game two flips around, and we see the Warriors just with a complete new sense of purpose and just energy. They shut Boston down, and when it comes to the role players on the Celtics, Robert Williams, Al Horford, Derek White, Marcus Smart, they were nowhere to be found. Warriors even it up, and I have to say, just my perspective going to game three, it's going to be interesting. The Celtics haven't lost a game, back-to-back games at all in this playoff, so it definitely it favors them to come out with a W in game three. But I think that the Warriors, again, I just like their coaching. I like the fact that they're more disciplined. I would not be surprised if they are the first team to hand the Celtics their first back-to-back losses in the playoffs, given how they've been performing as of late.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to digest from the first two games. I actually saw game one a little differently than you, Dan. I personally thought that Golden State dominated most of that game. Boston just had an incredibly hot stretch where they could not miss. It reminded me of, I think, game two against Miami, where it just didn't matter. Whatever defense you put with them, it was falling. Like, they could not miss. I think they scored something like 29 points in 7 minutes. And it's like once the second unit came in, they struggled, and then they tried to bring the starters back in. But by then, Boston already had the momentum, and the game was out of reach at that point. But it was definitely a pretty shocking turnaround to finish game one. To me, game two felt a lot like game one for the first half. And I'd say even leading up until the third quarter, it was pretty close. A lot of back and forth, some nice runs. Both teams just kind of answering each other's big shots back and forth, but it didn't feel like in game two that I guess Boston obviously had that game one win already in the books, so they didn't really have to go out and win game two. And I think you could kind of tell by their attitude that they kind of felt that way, especially once Golden State kind of started front running and hitting all these crazy shots. I thought Jaylen Brown had a really weak second half. I know a lot of people got on Tatum because he was like a minus 36 and all that for the game in game two, but to me, Jaylen Brown, I mean, if you remember, Danny, he had like 3 3-pointers to start like the game. He had 10 points, I think, in the first quarter. I thought he was on his way to like a 30 to 40 point game, and I think he only ended up with like 17. Just a pretty disappointing second half from Jaylen Brown, and I think the rest of the offense just kind of sputtered along with him. To me, though, the real story is kind of Golden State. How are they going to handle winning one in Boston? I think this series is going to come back to San Francisco tied 2-2. I think, kind of like you mentioned, Golden State has obviously figured it out a little bit. I do think that the outside of that one stretch of in game one, I do think they've kind of dominated the series. I know a lot of Celtics fans were kind of upset with the officiating in game two, and they felt like it was kind of one way. Draymond obviously had a big factor to play. I wanted to get your thoughts, Dan, on Draymond and that whole situation. Once he picked up the technical, a lot of people said that the refs kind of gave him a lot of leverage and a lot of leeway. And I thought that was kind of something interesting. So I wanted to hear what you thought about that.
He knows how to play the system. It's that simple. The refs have made it very clear that for the most part, they will let a lot of things slide if a player already has a technical to kind of keep the entertainment aspect going. So he leverages that situation and just makes the most of it. I think that he's playing a very dangerous game, though, especially kind of taunting the refs to call something more on him, given his press conference after the game. So I would not be surprised if Draymond Green, and I think he's one tech away, if I'm not mistaken, from being suspended a game. So I would not be surprised if he is suspended a game in these playoffs. He just doesn't learn his lesson at the end of the day. I can't blame him for it because it's led to him winning, but it definitely has cost him a lot, and he just doesn't seem to be getting it. So, you know, it's a fine balance for Golden State. And the worst part is, even if he was suspended a game, I could still see them winning the series. That's just how favorable I believe the matchup is for the Warriors versus the Celtics.
I don't know if I'll agree with you there. I think Draymond, obviously you have Steph shooting and all that, but I think Draymond's defense is really what gets this Warriors team going. And when he's giving you 9 points, 8 boards and 7 assists, I think that's when the Warriors are at their best. I think I read in the playoffs right now, the Warriors are plus 107 when Draymond is on the floor. When he's off the floor, they're a -9. He obviously has a huge role on that team. And I think the refs kind of understand, like, this is the finals. They're going to let shit slide. This isn't going to be a little ticky-tack call. Obviously, I think that first tech is kind of going to be a warning for him. But I do think it's a little worrisome that it could get to that point where one ref is just like, you know what? This, you've gone too far. I'm throwing you out. But I'd like to think if they are going to eject Draymond, it's got to be something that's a very serious offense. Nothing like what we saw last night. So I don't know, but I saw a lot of complaints from Boston Celtics fans. Guys, I don't see it as super one-sided as far as the officiating went last night. I thought it was pretty evenly matched. You had to expect that Golden State was going to come out and play really well with their backs against the wall, and that's exactly what they did. Draymond played physical, and kind of like you mentioned, Dan, I mean, he knows what he's doing.
And just to go back to the original reason why I picked Golden State in six, they're just a more disciplined team. It's not coaching, it's just experience. They know what they're doing. You can't forgive the fact that I think the Celtics had over 30 points off turnovers. The Warriors had over 30 points off turnovers from the Celtics turnovers, which was like second most in the finals. You can't play that sloppy. And regardless if they feel confident that they're going home and, you know, they're going to be evened up a piece having stolen home court, it doesn't matter. It's all about consistency. And that's going to be their downfall, in my opinion. Like, you can't be switching on and off with such a young team and such an inexperienced team. LeBron could do it with the Cavs, with a roster full of veterans. Golden State could kind of do it, but with such a young team, they are one Jimmy Butler three away from being at home when they should have won that series much more easily than what it came down to. So that discipline just isn't there, and it comes with time, it comes with experience, but it's their Achilles heel. It's that simple.
I 100% agree. They should have beat the Heat in six. And I think their inconsistency and their lack of discipline just kind of showed a lot in that series. I felt like they were more talented than Miami, but Miami, it just felt like, made less mistakes. And I felt like they were even just as hungry, if not hungrier. So I don't think you're going to get away with that with Golden State. And I think you could even see that. I mean, Marcus Smart, basically, we posted that video of him basically saying these aren't the Miami Heat, and I think that team is starting to see, like, this is another beast. This is a championship proven team. I mean, Dan, Marcus Smart, just to talk about him for a second, I think he's been a big disappointment in the first two games. I think their turnovers, he is a big reason, like him not being able to steady the flow of the offense as their point guard. I know you're going to have Tatum and Brown having the ball in their hands a lot, but to me, I want to see better decision-making from Marcus Smart as well when he's out there on the floor, because when those threes are not falling for him, he hasn't been giving you much in this series. And I actually am really impressed with how Derek White has played. Obviously, game two, not as good. But, I mean, how he's looked in game one, that trade that Boston made earlier this season is looking super genius, because he's basically been their sixth man / next best guard.
Yeah, I agree with the Derek White point. I don't want to keep piling on Marcus Smart, but the fact that he is allowing Steph Curry to shoot at 40% is just pretty jaw-dropping, considering he's a defensive player of the year, and everyone thought he would contain Steph under 30. So I think it's a testament to both how great Steph is as a scorer, but also just how poorly Marcus Smart is playing in this series. But I think that the accountability has to lie more. We're not talking enough about Jason Tatum. We're not talking enough about, you know, a top 10 player in the league. Like, Brian, why are we not talking about this? I don't understand.
Yeah,
game one, double-double, I get it.
Yeah.
But like, regardless, game two, you need him to close. Again, it goes back to the point, we aren't talking about how he's been okay, but in my opinion, there's two players that have been better for Boston so far this series. Al Horford, who had a terrible game two, so that just goes to show how good of a game one he had, and Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
I need more from Jason Tatum if I'm going to have him be the best player in this series and kind of the prohibitive favorite to win the finals MVP if Boston comes out on top.
I agree they're going to need more from Jason Tatum to win the series. I do have very high expectations for him, especially just being announced, obviously, all NBA first team, just winning the conference finals MVP. However, you know, you do also have to flip the perspective a little bit and understand that he did have the record for most assists in a finals game in game one with 13. Obviously, he did not shoot well, but even in the last series, he had a lot of games where he didn't shoot well and they managed to win the series. And then you look at the totality of the first
game. That's on him.
No, like I understand. That's
the team then. Like, we can't give him the credit for what his team accomplishes.
I agree. And that's why I touched on it when we were talking about that recap for Heat Celtics. It's that Jason Tatum has a lot more help than a lot of these other superstars that have gone to the finals and won the championship as the best player. He's definitely gotten consistent performances. The Boston Celtics are a very deep team. They get a lot of contributions, as you saw over the first two games of the series. I think if the Celtics win the series, I have a hard time seeing Jason Tatum not being the finals MVP. That's just how I feel. I think he's going to bounce back. I think he's going to give you some good performances in game three. I don't know if it's going to be game three and game four, and that's the worrisome part, but you know, you also have to take into consideration they did what they needed to do. They won a game at Golden State.
Yeah, no, like that you can't put aside. I just think it harps back to the point of your entire argument of the best player on a championship team. It's okay, like if Jason Tatum is that, do we raise him to superstar status knowing the help he had as a team? By some standards, yes. By other standards, no. So it's just I think we're dubbing him a superstar a little prematurely. I think we need to see a little bit more out of him in these next 1 or 2 years. And I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm trying to look for consistency here. If you get deemed first team all NBA, you need to be the best player on the court. It's that simple.
That I agree completely. And we're going to find out. But again, I don't think Boston can win this series without Jason Tatum giving you an all NBA type performance. So if he doesn't give it and he continues the inconsistency, I think they lose in 6 or 7. So we'll see how it turns out.
What's your top three for finals MVP, regardless of who wins right now, just in terms of ranking?
So Steph Curry's number one. I think no Klay as Klay Thompson is someone we really haven't touched on, Dan. And like Klay has given you just about nothing, even though I do think he's going to bounce back. Number two, I would probably say is Al Horford, just because in my opinion, the way he poured it on during that stretch in game one, I think really made a difference. I think game two, obviously he didn't perform the way he did in game one, but his birthday, for those of you guys that don't know, is coming up on Friday. And I have a feeling game three or game four, he's going to have another big performance. And then number three, I probably by default would say Jason Tatum, but I would say Jaylen Brown is also right in that conversation as well.
We have similar. I have Jaylen Brown slightly over Jason Tatum, just given the consistency I've seen from him. Again, he played poorly in the second half, but he still got you double-digit scoring. And to be quite fair, the entire Boston team couldn't do anything in the second half.
So I
have Jaylen Brown third, but again, right now, Al Horford's clearly been the best, the most important player for the team.
What universe are we living in, Dan, that Al Horford is right now one of the front runners for finals MVP? It is unbelievable the run he's had.
I love it for him, though. You know, you want to see veterans at least have the opportunity to win a ring. I think I'm still in the band camp, like, you know, Warriors are going to win, but regardless, I cheer for the veteran. I like the underdog there.
Yeah, love the Al Horford story. It's been great to watch.
All right, Brian, let's pivot over to some other breaking news that we heard. Quinn Snyder, he had 2 years left on his contract, and he decided to step down from being the head coach of the Utah Jazz. Pretty, you know, PC, strategic statement that he put out there. He basically said that the Jazz needed a new voice in the locker room, and it wasn't, contradicting philosophies or anything like that. It was just time for both parties to move on. I thought that was the right approach. Ultimately, I think everyone saw the writing on the wall. Even him, if he wasn't let go during the year here, he'd probably be let go next offseason unless they won the chip. But yeah, like, there's obviously, Utah's been this weird team that no one pays enough attention to them, even though they have a lot of great pieces. And now they have a huge hole in the head coaching office. What does Danny Ainge do? And also, we have the news that Donovan Mitchell is uneasy, I think is a word that they used, with the Snyder firing and what that means for the franchise. So it's a two-pronged question. One, what would you do if you're a Danny Ainge, like in terms of roster and also in terms of head coach? And then two, what do you think is best for Donovan Mitchell?
Tough. I mean, Danny Ainge has got some decisions to make. I think we knew that, you know, between Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, and Quinn Snyder, with all the rumors that have been bubbling, and obviously it's been quite a few years now, and they haven't made it to conference finals. I mean, if something was going to give, and a move needed to be made. So I'm not surprised that this is obviously the first domino, Quinn Snyder. I would say if I'm Danny Ainge, I definitely want to get – you have to first make a decision. I think it's pretty obvious that you're not going to win a championship with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert as a duo. So you're going to have to decide who's more of a priority. Who can I maybe get more value and more assets back for if I were to make a trade? I know that they're looking at potentially also shopping Mike Conley and Jordan Clarkson. So I think there's going to be a lot of moves. I think Utah's going to be probably the most active team in the NBA as far as the trade market goes this offseason. I think that there's going to be some offers for Donovan Mitchell, but I don't think they're going to seriously consider them, because as we know with Danny Ainge, he's going to ask for $1,000,001 if he can. I think Rudy Gobert is probably the most realistic trade target, and I think there's going to be some interest for sure. I know a team like Dallas, Chicago, the Bulls were obviously kind of linked to him earlier today as showing some interest. And I think if you're going to make that decision, you're also doing it knowing that Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, you know, from what we've seen, don't really get along well. And they also don't seem to be the best match on court. So if you're going to do it, it makes sense to move Gobert. You're removing a player that Donovan Mitchell clearly doesn't like. Mitchell obviously has a couple years left on his contract, so you're not trying to trade him. But I think Donovan Mitchell, this whole report about him being unsettled and uneasy, I think has a lot to do with him trying to flex his power and his influence to say, hey, I'm upset. I'm going to make everybody aware that I'm upset. And despite my contract situation, like, I want to be considered when you're deciding this next head coach. He basically said Quinn Snyder was a big reason why he signed an extension with Utah. And so things are changing now. And obviously we don't know where Utah is going to go, but I think the best thing to do to appease Donovan Mitchell, if you know he's your best player and he's a guy that is a part of your future there, I think you want to try to keep him happy. Maybe you're not going to hire the coach that he wants, which I think is Johnny Bryant, but maybe you can at least remove Rudy Gobert, get some other pieces back and say, hey, we're going to have a new coach. We're going to have a new look. We're going to make some trades this offseason, and we're going to look different than we did last year. And at least it's something that you can at least sell to Donovan and say, hey, give us a year. Let's see how this works out before, you know, you make any rash decisions. And I think Donovan Mitchell could potentially be open to that. I'm actually, Danny, very curious to see what Dwayne Wade's role is going to be in this whole thing. I saw an article today that said he might be pushing for David Fizdale, which I think would be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, I think Fiz is a good assistant coach, but he hasn't had a great stretch as a head coach. Out of the five candidates that we've heard, like the front runners, you have Johnny Bryant, Alex Jensen, who's a Utah assistant, Terry Stotts, Will Hardy, Celtics assistant, and Adrian Griffin. Which direction do you think that the Jazz go in? I'm actually leaning towards either Adrian Griffin or Will Hardy.
So I think the Will Hardy is an interesting connection just because of, you know, he's with Boston. Obviously, Boston's had a really strong playoff run, which I think will kind of boost his resume. Danny Ainge has the experience with Boston as well. I actually think Terry Stotts is going to be someone that is going to end up being a finalist for it. And I think they're going to also really do their homework on a guy like Frank Vogel. who obviously just got let go by the Lakers. I think he's someone that has a pretty strong background. I don't think he was dealt the best hand in LA as far as the roster goes. I think it's, you know, he's a championship winning coach, which none of the other candidates can really say out there. I think Frank Vogel is going to be someone that they definitely do a lot of due diligence on.
I like the development aspect of, again, just some of these assistants. They've definitely developed their teams, and Utah, they need to focus on their youth at the end of the day, right? Like, Donovan Mitchell is the future, and they need to focus on how they can get the most out of him. Mike Conley's pretty much done at this point. Jordan Clarkson is a nice role player, and they just have a bunch of surrounding players, but yeah, the key is Mitchell. That plain and simple. Brian, do you give any any, I guess the word is, it's like vitriol or any like grounds to the whole rumors of Donovan Mitchell ending up in New York, or do you just think that's fluff?
I think it's fluff. I mean, I think, and look, I say this as a Knicks fan, I think that the media knows what they're doing. They know that there's a lot of Knicks fans out there, and they're going to get a lot of clicks by linking some star to the Knicks. I think the Knicks should stay the course, continue to build through the draft, and when you build the right team, the right star will come, or the opportunity to get the right star, I think, will come, much like the Toronto Raptors did with Kawhi Leonard a couple years ago. I think that, I don't even think that Mitchell is a great fit. And don't get me wrong, Donovan Mitchell would probably make the Knicks better, but knowing Danny Ainge, he's going to ask for an arm and a leg to make that type of deal happen. And I just, to be honest with you, I see Donovan Mitchell as a guy that you can add to a team. I think he'd be a much better fit in Miami, for example. I think he would potentially make them a championship caliber team by adding him and not by removing too many other pieces, because I just think he fits what they need a little bit better. And also, just for him, it's, let's be real, like, I'm a Knicks fan, but I understand that Donovan Mitchell's not going to put us over the top. Whereas if Mitchell were to go to Miami, I think he gives them, he makes them better, first of all. And I think second, it's a better situation than what he currently has in Utah. Whereas if he were to go to the Knicks, I would argue, I mean, especially with the way the East has gotten better, I don't know if he's a player that's going to move the needle enough to make them a championship team. Like, there would have to be more moves, and you're already going to have to give up so much just to get him. I just don't think it makes sense for the Knicks, even though the story's awesome. He's from New York and all that. I think he's a better fit for Miami.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't think the fit is right in New York ultimately. But, you know, the media is going to keep pushing that narrative until it's just completely out of the picture.
Yeah, and I don't want it to happen, by the way. I think it would be like a redux of the Carmelo Anthony Knicks. We maybe have a good playoff run or two, and then it just, I don't think it's going to be enough to get us to where we need to be. No disrespect to Donovan Mitchell. I think he's a top 15 player, but I don't think he's
really
the guy. Yep, I do. But I don't think he's the guy to get the Knicks
over right now.
I think he's right at the end. He's like right at 14 or 15, I think.
Okay, I need to see this list.
Yeah.
Later on.
Yeah, we'll discuss the list for sure. But I, you know, because we've been talking about Mitchell, I want to know, because I mentioned his name and I was expecting a reaction from a Heat lifer like yourself, Dwayne Wade. I think we can't.
I don't think it's as I don't think it's as heavy as you think it is.
Interesting.
I think that he's gonna be playing. That's why I didn't really like to focus on it that much. I think he's going to be playing more so to Mitchell's ears and just trying to keep him content, keep him engaged. But I don't think that he's ultimately going to have a huge impact on, you know, the next hires. Like, now that, you know, Dwayne Wade has a great connection with Ryan Smith, the owner of the Jazz, but I don't know how strong of a connection he has with Danny Ainge, who ultimately is the person that's going to be making the majority of the decisions, right? So I think that Danny Ainge is going to kind of hold a tight ship as he did in Boston. And so I just don't see Dwayne Wade having as much of a say in the personnel there. Maybe making some recommendations on players he should go for and stuff like that. Maybe he definitely gets some leeway there. But in terms of coaching and just front office positions, I just don't see it personally.
Very interesting that they decide to invest all that money in him and then – hey, listen, every organization's run differently, though, so we'll see.
What do you mean they decide to invest all that money in him? He had to pay to be part of ownership.
No, I'm talking about Donovan Mitchell. I'm talking about Donovan Mitchell. Oh, okay. They gave him all that money, and now they're going to risk potentially, you know, upsetting him. But again, it comes down to that chain of command. Like, unless you were a LeBron James or a Giannis Antetokounmpo or Kevin Durant type or Steph Curry, like, it's hard to – build your roster around, hey, what this guy is suggesting we do. Like, I just don't think Donovan Mitchell is that caliber of a player where you're going to bend over backwards to, you know, appease him.
You also have to consider the history of what's been going on, right? Yeah, Ryan Smith recently bought the team. The team was kind of in flux last year. Danny Ainge steps in. So there's a lot of moving pieces. And with any change in management, there's going to be a lot of changes that fall like way with it. I didn't expect Quinn Snyder to stay long term, given the fact that Danny Ainge took over. I figured Danny Ainge would want one of his guys sooner or later. And we don't know if Danny Ainge prefers Rudy Gobert or Donovan Mitchell. We all assume very strongly that he prefers Donovan Mitchell, but it's not for certain. So, like, there's a lot of pieces with having a new – he's like the CEO. Like, he's got some crazy title with the Jazz. So when you have someone with so much power in an organization, it just completely pivots what you think should be happening.
Yeah, Danny Ainge is 100% going to have final say on whatever happens this summer with Utah. What do you think is what's your final prediction? What do you think is going to be the ultimate solution over there?
Yeah, so obviously they trade Gobert, in my opinion. I think that they're probably going to trade. If I were them, I would trade him to Dallas and get, you know, some of those stretch bigs that they have, either Maxi Kleber or Dwight Powell and some other nice complementary pieces. I think maybe you could squeeze a Spencer Dinwiddie out of them as well, given the fact that I think he's kind of a weird on man out, even though I love his role in Dallas. But regardless, they can definitely get some assets from Dallas, kind of restructure. And again, I see one of these young assistant head coaches being hired, whether it's Will Hardy, Adrian Griffin, Johnny Bryant, Alex Jensen, whoever. I just see a younger or, you know, a new head coach stepping in and kind of laying grounds for a new philosophy.
Very interesting. It's going to be, I think that those moves are going to say a lot about, you know, how does Danny Ainge view Donovan Mitchell as, are we ready to win now or are we ready to win like 2-3 years from now? Because, you know, again, Donovan Mitchell only has so much time left on that contract, and I know he's going to want to start to see results before he's willing to commit ongoing also to the Utah Jazz. So I think that's something that Danny Ainge is going to have to consider when he makes those decisions.
I mean, he's got to get better regardless. So to your point, he would probably get attention, but if he's not all NBA status, if he hasn't really won any awards by then, like what you're going to have a team like Sacramento, Oklahoma City, Portland, like just throwing you money. Is that what he wants? You know, it would be interesting. I think there needs to be development on both parts, not just Donovan Mitchell. He's not at that superstar level that commands that level of attention and respect yet.
I agree. I agree on that point.
All right, Brian. And then one more topic. Well, two topics, but they're both pretty related to one another that I wanted to address. So there was rumors and rumblings earlier in the week, last week rather, that Phil Knight was the founder of Nike, for those that don't know, was interested in purchasing the Portland Trail Blazers from the Allen family. He supposedly put in an offer, and then the organization, the Trail Blazers organization, put out a statement saying that they weren't for sale. I have a two-part question. One, do you really buy that? Because I have this gut feeling that ever since Paul Allen, the original owner of the Trailblazers and the Seattle Seahawks, ever since he passed away, and his sister has been managing these teams, I just don't think she likes it. Like, I genuinely just don't feel the passion from everything I've seen about Seattle and also Trailblazers. I think that it's just she's doing it for the sake of doing it. I could be wrong, but I've seen interviews where she doesn't know players' names. She doesn't know anything about the teams. So I believe that Phil Knight has a good shot, whether the organization's saying so or not. I think money talks, and he has enough to ultimately sway the Allen family and the Allen Foundation to sell. So I want to get your thoughts on just Phil Knight or any other potential owner buying the Trailblazers. And then two, Adam Silver in a conference stated that even though the NBA is not planning on expanding for the next couple of years, they have mentioned that Seattle and Las Vegas would be prime locations to have expansion teams. So what are your thoughts on the NBA possibly expanding?
Yeah, so for first, I mean, I think I'll defer to you as far as, you know, the owner. I think she obviously you're a big Seahawks guy, so I know you've probably seen the quality dip a little bit over there. As far as it goes, I think that they're going to ultimately sell it. I just don't think it's going to be at that price. I think this was Phil Knight's kind of a first offer type of deal. You know, these things don't always just happen right away, especially when it's been in the family, so to speak, as long as it has been. So it wouldn't surprise me if the deal ends up getting done, but maybe at a bit of a higher price. Maybe they try to up the value of the team this year, I think Portland is definitely going to try to make a move to appease Dame Lillard as well. So I think, you know, they're going to give it another shot next year and see how they look. But I think a deal will ultimately get done. I just don't know when. And then as far as NBA expansion, I love the idea of Seattle and Vegas getting being the next two cities to get teams. Obviously, Seattle had the Sonics. Vegas being kind of the entertainment capital of the world, it just makes so much sense. Also, with sports betting becoming so popular, we've seen the NFL kind of do that with the Raiders, and I mean, it's really starting to pay off. I believe I would love to see it, and then we could see some of these Western Conference teams maybe shift to the East, where they probably should be based on where they are at geographically. But I think it just makes sense. I think it's just a matter of time. I'm hoping within the next 3 years is when I think expansion is going to happen in the NBA. It's going to be really exciting.
What team would you shift? Because obviously a team would have to shift.
Memphis. That's a good question. Well, if you're adding two teams, then you would need
from to move.
So what two
teams would you move?
I would say Memphis and probably maybe Minnesota. I mean, I think just geographically, those are the two most Eastern.
I say Memphis and New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans is – I think you can't go wrong with either one. New Orleans is
– well, obviously Memphis, right?
Yeah, anything east of Texas basically I think would be Eastern Conference basically. That's what it should be, you know.
Brian's geography, guys. East of Texas is Eastern Conference. West of Texas or in Texas is Western Conference. There you go.
I'd say anything east of Texas should be Eastern Conference is what I'm saying.
Again, Brian's logic has no flaws there. So I can't dispute that, guys. Oh, all right, well, that about wraps it up for us. I mean, next, unless you have any other topics you want to talk about, Brian, next up would probably be us talking after Game 5, where it's very possible we could have an NBA champion by then. That would be pretty wild.
I don't see it. I see this 2-2 going back to San Francisco for Game 5 for sure.
Yeah, me too. But you can't put it out of the realm of possibilities regardless, right? Yeah. Brian, any parting thoughts for the audience? Anything that you want to impose on them?
No, I'm actually just Googling some NBA team maps just so I can actually see where the teams are. It does look like New Orleans is a little bit more east than Minnesota. So that move would make a lot of sense in my opinion.
There we go, guys. Brian is a geographer at the end of the day, so he needs to get these things right. It's going to irk him otherwise.
But you know, for those of you, you know, who would be happen to be watching the episode and looking at a map of the NBA teams, if you look at it, it would actually make sense for the Timberwolves to be in the Central Division with the Bucks, Bulls, and Pacers that are very close to those teams. And actually, New Orleans would fit. Well, you know what I'm saying. New Orleans would fit very well with the West.
How do you have Washington in the Southeast Division? I mean,
I know. That should not be the case at all. But like New Orleans is very close to Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, OKC. So it would make sense from a travel perspective to keep all those teams close together instead of making New Orleans fly further east. But you know, we'll see what ends up happening, but it's going to happen at some point.
All right, guys. Well, that about wraps it up. If you're like Pat Riley, you've had a hell of a day. You're 77 years old and can do probably more pushups than whoever you're talking to. So keep that energy as you go into your weeks, guys. That's the most important thing. And apart from that, just make sure to keep up with us on social. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. We post regularly just all the NBA news and give our thoughts and facts on just the finals games and how they're playing out. And be sure to follow the pod so you're up to date with the most recent episodes. So until next time, guys, take it easy.